Abigail Washburn and Bela Fleck have certainly recorded before. They performed together consistently over the last, I'll say, 4 years. They've released a brand new album, which is absolutely stunning. It's called Echo in the Valley on Rounder Records. Abigail and Bela join me in the second hour to discuss this album, the concept behind it. They had very definite intent as they put this album together. It is, in my opinion, the best melding of three-finger-style banjo from Bela and clawhammer-style from Abigail that I've ever heard consistently in a recording. The levels of musicianship, the way that the arrangements are done, the way that the song is presented, I think is rather extraordinary, and couldn't wait. I was so glad that they had the opportunity to talk to us, to talk to you, so soon after its release, which was only a week or so ago. A wonderful discussion with Abigail Washburn and Bela Fleck, all about a couple things pop up, not just related to this wonderful new release on Rounder Records, Echo in the Valley, but that's the reason that we got together to chat. I'm really happy to have welcome back Bela Fleck to Unreal Bluegrass, and also Abigail Washburn. You know, as we're going to talk about this, an album that I just can't quit listening to, Echo in the Valley, which is now out on Rounder, and welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Steve.
Hi.
This is and Abigail, I'm glad that you're part of this, because I've seen you perform many years for different with Uncle Earl, with the Sparrow, I want to say quartet.
Yes.
And I've always been a fan of how you present the music and the history, and I love to go see performers that present a historical context and recreate those things. But I've never been so impressed. Always impressed with your singing and your ability to play behind yourself and play the music, but I've never been so impressed with your clawhammer style on this album. I just think maybe I never had a chance to get it exhibited before, but this is phenomenal.
Well, you know, there just might be a chance that I've become a better clawhammer banjo player as a result of playing with one of the best banjo players in the face of the planet.
I thought that might be a response, and since he's sitting there, I should assume that would be the first response. But I really do. If someone were to say to me, how can I get a sample of, or what should I do to get a feel for Echo in the Valley, I think the first cut, there's two or three that I would say. If you can only listen to one, though, start with Over the Divide, because Bela, as I listen, in the left channel is you, and after like 10 seconds or so, the seamless merge with Abby playing the clawhammer banjo, and then that continues for a while, then the vocal starts. But to me, the whole album and the whole concept is the merging of these two styles, and Abby, I think your playing is just stellar throughout. But I really think that first song might be, that's the key, that's the opening to what's going to happen following.
Well, that's neat to hear. I think we had an instinct that was true, because not that we haven't combined clawhammer and three-finger style that Bela, you know, obviously plays, but before, which we did on our first record.
Sure.
But on this record, we just took it to a new place. And the truth is, until you've tried to combine those 16th notes as a clawhammer player and a three-finger player for many years, finding the subtlety of that pocket and the way those notes fit together is—it's a real art form, and it doesn't come quickly. It's something that's taken a lot of time and sitting next to each other and hearing each other's ways of treating the tempo or the beat that has been a big part of this process. And I feel like on Over the Divide, we've really found a beautiful way to sit in the tempo.
It's almost—I mean, the separation is so—I like it, because as I listen, Bela, I hear you on my left channel is the way it plays to me, and then Abby joins in, but I think this is, to me, is the perfect introduction, and throughout the entire album, and geez, on the medley that you do, the long medley, Sally in the Garden, Big Country, and Molly Put the Kettle On, that's seamless, and the playing is on both. I'll talk about the rest of the album, but I'm so impressed with your playing, Abigail, and Bela, I'm always impressed with yours, but I'm just saying, the way this is seamlessly put together, it has to come, Abby, as you mentioned, from that sitting side by side. And of course, I've seen you guys perform together numerous times, but Bela, it has to be from that sitting and seeing the reaction and doing the live performances, to where this is all melded in together. It's almost like one sound now, which I think is so hard to do with these two styles.
Yeah, I also think it's that now we've been playing together for 4 years, like a lot.
Yeah.
Full time. And that particular song is one we've been doing on stage a lot. So that one, you know, you can play a song a few times and you get pretty good at it, but when you play a song for a couple of years, you start to own it. And it's just inside you, and when you play it, you just start it and you just go there. And that one, that was a good one. So it was one of the first ones we recorded because it set the template for what we wanted the new stuff to feel like as well. Because once you know what it's supposed to feel like, then you're not satisfied until you get it all to be that way.
Well, go ahead.
It helped us playing that one for a while.
And vocally, it also sort of set a standard, a new kind of standard where it shows that we're going to really push the dynamic range of what my voice can do on this record in a way that perhaps we didn't do on the last record.
I have scribbles all over this, Abby, about vocals.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how to address it, but I think that's exactly the point that I could make where I'm smart enough to say that. So talk about a little bit about how your vocals have been emphasized or stressed or whatever, because there's so much music here. But that's a key component because it's you and Bela, and Bela sings a little bit. But, I mean, your vocals are just... to me, they're different than I've heard you before.
Yeah, well, even just on Over the Divide alone, I go from almost whisper singing some lyrics to a full-throated yodel.
Yeah, so, it's a yodel that's almost more like a Balkan yodel than a what we call a Southern yodel to me.
Yeah,
an ethnic yodel.
And so, and we doubled the vocal on the yodel, so it was just sharing that we were going to go into some new territory. You couldn't just expect sort of the mid-rangey, kind of old-timey sing-song stuff. And I'm really excited about how we did that on a lot of the material.
Oh, it throughout every time there's a vocal in there, there are some things on Let It Go you actually sort of, I assume it's your voice dubbed over yourself. It's kind of like a choral effect as you go to Let It Go. And which is, here's the thing to both of you, this thematically, and by that I don't mean the music, but the tone and the songs are sort of an older style. But the music is not always. I mean, in other words, you talk about going back to Harlan and Blue Ridge Mountains and things and sing about those things. But musically, there's so much more going on. And if you look at the vocals in Let It Go, that's not something you're normally going to hear in a song or an album that is kind of picking up these older, more traditional themes. Does that make sense? What I'm trying to say?
Yeah. It's a very exposed kind of way of singing. Abby had to sing on that chorus, and the song is it's very personal. It's all about, you know, raising a kid and how you learn how to let go of them more and more, and how sad that can be. He used to say to us when he would get in a crying fit, he would say, "I don't want to cry. I don't want to cry." That became. And then when Abby did it, it just didn't feel like it seemed like we could do something else with it. It opened up the possibility that we would do a few sonic kind of embellishments on this record. It would still be stuff that we could do live.
Right.
Nothing. Wouldn't do anything that we weren't adding harmonies that weren't going to be there.
Correct.
But for some reason to us it seemed like, and we did this a little bit on the first record too, like having multiple versions of Abby singing the same thing at the same time just created a chorusing effect, like a vibe. And it still was one person singing. It was just a group of one person singing, and then make it softer so that no voice is sticking out, and make it really blend. It's a beautiful sound that's been used since the Beatles. When you listen back to the tracks, they did the double tracking.
I thought about that when I listened to this. One of the first things I thought about is what you're talking about, those Beatles harmonies. I mean, not harmonies, but the backing that you're talking about.
Right. And those guys would let at that point, people weren't as sophisticated. So if a guy sang the song twice and he didn't sing it exactly the same way, you could kind of tell. And that was kind of a cornerstone to how they would do that. It was fine. Everyone liked it. But as people got better and better at it, doubling vocals became a real thing and an art to making a double where you don't actually hear the imperfections or the differences between them, but it just sort of becomes a chorus of one voice that sounds different. And it gave us a color change that we were looking for that would heighten the emotional point.
Instrumentation? And I know the overall goal is this is kind of something we can do without a lot of other people around on stage, because I know you're doing a lot of that now. But you add in different instruments, in particular on Let It Go. You have a different version of a banjo that the listeners might want to have explained a little bit.
Right. Well, the rules of the of engagement in our duo is that you have to be able to play it live. So, yes, we could add 5 banjos to a track, but we're not going to do it. But we can alter which banjos we play. We could try different combinations of the instruments that we have here that we take out on the road with us. We could try different tunings. We could pull out new instruments that we haven't tried. So we did a lot of that. And on Let It Go, I had an instrument. We auditioned a bunch of different instruments on this tune before we found one that not only sounded really cool but would stay in tune, because we were going to try a sitar banjo on this, but I just didn't have one that was going to hold pitch. And so we moved to this idea of this 10-string banjo that Goldtone made for me some years back, because I had played a 10-string banjo someone had. And I thought,
I've seen those.
Yeah, they started making them, and I doubt they sold very many, but it ended up being the perfect thing for this track. It was just because it was going to be a very melodic, simple banjo part, like almost like you hear on a pop record, a guitar part playing the melody, a lot of that, and not a lot of rolling, and it could be an instrument that was very spare but had a vibration to it of some kind, because you weren't going to be playing so busy.
Right. Well, because you can't because there's so many. I have to tell you, I played one of those and coveted one highly, but it was not one that I even felt comfortable I could sneak into my house.
Yeah, well, tuning it is a bear. I will say that. That is a bear. But it does give the song a signature. And then Abby was playing her cello banjo, so between cello banjo and 10-string banjo, you've got a pretty unique combination. What was surprising to me was how big that combination sounds.
Yes. I mean,
people think that, like the engineer who did the mastering is Richard Dodd. He was Tom Petty's engineer, a mix and sound engineer, and he just said, "Well, that just sounds like a pop record, and sonically it has everything from the bottom to the top. You know, it's just those two banjos between that and the vocals. It's a big sound, and it really isn't manipulated a lot. It's just that's what the instruments sound like together."
It's amazing what you can do with a couple of banjos and a couple of people. I mean, this whole album, I think, is a testament to the variety of tones, switching off on instruments and the different sounds you can use, and the vocals that can be done with that minimalist approach. By the way, I've never discussed the record with anyone who had rules of engagement as they went in. I thought that was good.
Well, limits are what make a record special. Unless the limit is that there are no limits, then that can make a record special too. You know, that you could have any instrument on any track, like the Beatles would do. But in this case, we could have gotten anybody to come play with us, but we decided, no, it's just us two. We could have overdubbed extra harmonies. We could have overdubbed extra instruments. We decided not to. We decided to keep that part of it the same. Now, what can we do now, once we've got rules like that? What can we do with this combination?
Okay. I skipped over the second cut, and I don't mean to go through each one of them, because I want to get a feel for what your approach is, and we're beginning to develop that a little bit with your help. Take Me to Harlan. There's a percussion sound, and Abby, I believe that's you, as I've seen you do this, I believe that's you dancing, and at one point there is a back and forth between Bela's banjo and you dancing that it's almost notes are you can almost pick out that you're reproducing the notes as you dance a little bit.
Yeah, well, yes, one of my ideas for this record that would push us into new territory was, especially myself, was to dance and sing at the same time. And Bela would have to entirely carry the instrumental aspect of the song. And that's what we did. It's called Take Me to Harlan. And
it reminds me a little bit, too, of a jazz ensemble to where there might be a pianist and a drummer kind of playing off, and the drummer actually, and I think more of Brubeck and Joe, I want to say Joe Morello, his ability
That's
to actually
right.
play melodies back.
Right. Well, you get the impression of it. Future Man, who I play with, also always talks about the melody in the drums. And Miles Davis said at some point that the melody will be found again in the drums. And so that became a big deal for Future Man. But I play a lot with Zakir Hussain, who's an Indian drummer, plays the tablas. And I think there's some inspiration from him, because Abby's heard us play a lot together.
Yes. Oh, exactly. That's exactly right. Thank you so much for clearing that up, because I hear that. Now that you mention it, yes, I can hear that happening.
Right. And also that there's something that they call a reduction in Indian music, which I've done a lot of with Zakir, where you do trades back and forth, just like you hear us doing, and then they get shorter and shorter, and then there's some kind of a hot lick to bring you back to the downbeat.
Yeah.
And so put that idea and try, what can we do that? What can we do with that idea in an earthy folk song, you know, gospel-y folk song with dancing and banjo? And it was a neat way. We knew it would be a good live thing to do, too, because it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah.
That trading.
How do you, Abby, how do you respond to what I see, what I hear to be the notes? How do you respond to, you're not just keeping the rhythm or you're actually sort of reproducing the notes that Bela is playing. I don't dance at all, so, and maybe we've explained it already, but how's that possible?
Well, I'm glad that's what you hear. I don't know.
I do. I hear some of it.
I mean,
the ear does that. Like, the ear does, when the rhythm is so directly related to the notes you just heard, your ear imposes
maybe
some
that's
of
it.
Notes on it. So that's part of it, but
yeah.
They're melodic percussion moves that Abby's doing.
Again,
so they produce those feelings.
Each time I do a shuffle or a stomp or one-legged shuffle, I mean, each one has a different weight to it, so it's going to have a different timbre.
That's it.
A different tone.
That's it.
So, so I imagine maybe there's just something subconscious and instinctual about the way that we're trying to interact. You know,
it works. You know what I would love to have at some point is these tracks broken down. So, because as I listen on one, you know, then they get mixed together. Because I think some of these things are so different, and that's what I think is the magic of this entire album, is some of the tracks, I'm not talking about that song in particular, but some of the music, some of the instrumental tracks are so different, but they blend together so well, which I think has to be the greatest art that you've brought to this project. I don't see how that's possible. When I listen, I'm thinking, how do they meld so well?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we did make a concerted effort to make each track have its own sound and signature, and that's a lot of times decided by what instruments we choose to use and what kind of song it's trying to be, and we try to let the song dictate to us a lot of what we should play.
I'm going to skip down a minute. If I could talk to a younger me. Now, Bela, you're, and again, in my mind as I separate the tracks, you're playing fairly quick. You're doing a lot of stuff that you do on the banjo so well, but the actual lyrics of the song, and as Abby is singing about talking to her younger me, she actually uses the phrase, slow down, which I thought, I don't know if that was an accident or just me.
No, that was very purposeful, exactly. The idea of my role going slowly on the cello banjo and being in the register that it is, feeling like it's almost muddy and trying to suck time backwards. But Bela's playing is exactly the opposite.
Exactly.
Of nature and time moving quickly when you're so absorbed, especially in the act of helping another little one grow up. And so it's that contrast between the rapidness with which Phil is moving his fingers on his instrument and the slowness with which I'm doing the same on mine and with my vocal.
Mm-hmm. Which is hard, by the way. I have to say, it's one thing to play fast banjo against someone, you know, chopping the mandolin and some bass is going bong, bong, bong. That's not so hard, but trying to play banjo against a halftime cello banjo that's literally trying to pull you back is tough. But we've been able to get better and better and better at it, and I think it turned out really good.
I chuckled. I'm not laughing out loud, but I'm kind of like smiling and chuckling at the effect that you were able to put into that, because I thought, I think this is deliberate, but it was something that I wanted to ask, because the words actually slow down as you're keeping that up-tempo speed on your playing. There's some bluesy things in here. There's a couple of things that I don't let it bring you down. There's definitely a blues feel to that. You actually play slide. You're playing slide banjo, Bela, on My Home's Across the Blue Ridge Mountain.
That's right. Which I was trying to figure out. Well, to tell you the truth, Abby sings the crap out of that song. And then I'm supposed to play this solo. And nothing I was playing was doing the job. It was like, this is not up to snuff. And I was really getting kind of frustrated. And then when we were in the studio, I was like, okay, I got to get out the slide. Now, I got to slide out, you know, back in the early 80s on a recording I was doing with Sam Bush and Newgrass Revival, and for a guy named Hobo Jim up in Alaska. He came to Nashville and we backed him up on a record. And I pulled out the slide, and Sam was angry at me at the time because he is a great slide player.
He does, yeah, on his mandolin.
He is amazing slide player on the mandolin. And Jerry Douglas is a great slide player. And here, just because I happened to pull it out and Hobo Jim thought it was kind of cool, I played slide on this track, slide banjo, and it was kind of bad, honestly. I mean, it was never very in tune. So I really wanted it, if I was going to do it, and I thought Sam might hear it, I wanted it to be like, no, this is really good, you know. So I busted my butt on that, working, you know, getting my slide playing up to snuff enough to record that track and have that happen. And also I had to pick up the slide in the middle of the song as Abby was finishing. We even constructed that. And a simple part I could just strum, and then I would hit the last chord open and grab the slide, put it on, and hit it without stopping, and then put the slide down on the last note of this solo so I could go back to accompanying her, which I do it live as well. But I wanted to be sure it was possible.
You
seem
really good at that, by the way.
Yeah, well, the other day I missed it, and I'm in on the second beat. But, yeah, so those kinds of things, it's one thing to do it on a record, but if you can't do it live, then you kind of cheat. But because we can do it live, I feel pretty great about it.
Well, let me ask you this then, one more question about the slide: metal or glass?
Metal. I actually have a slide that Bonnie Raitt gave me when the Flecktones were touring with her in Europe way back, and it doesn't sound as good on the banjo as the metal slide, the bronze slide. To me, that's the banjo really speaks out and is big and round and loud, and I like that.
I think slide playing on a fretted instrument is very difficult. I've always kept a slide in my case, but I've never found a reason to use it or get it out in public. But I think it's so difficult because I think there's so much more of the timing. A lot of people can play kind of sloppy sliding around blues,
right,
with a butt, but to actually be precise, that to me is the distinction that you do. I mean, you did work at it, so I applaud you for that. I love it. I love the fact that here's a banjo with a slide on it. I just think it's great.
Thank you. Well, it's tricky, but they do say that the mark of a true gentleman is a man who has a slide in his case but doesn't take it out.
I think you just made that up, but I'm okay. The medley, then, I mentioned that just a little bit early on. That's 7 minutes and 40 seconds, and it's the instrumentation to me, and this, again, we've talked about the blending of the two styles, which I would instantly say is, you know, the more recognizable Bela on the playing three finger and Abby's claw hammer, which I think is just excels throughout this whole thing. But that medley, if there's a more seamless medley that I've ever heard on a record, I can't tell you one right now because everything just fits together like the rest of the concept of this album. It all just sort of melds together, and that is the most seamless medley I've ever heard using banjos.
Wow!
Thank you.
Thank you.
We applaud your good taste.
I got an easy audience here today, I think is what it is. The
Something else really nice about us, this would be a good time.
I enjoy this so much, and all of these tunes, and Abby, and like I said, the themes, although the music doesn't always match what the themes of the all you coal miners, Abby, that's just one that's right there. I've seen you so many times, and I know that you're rich in the history and the tradition of the music. You're always looking back. But that, to me, is one of those songs that is absolutely I would associate with your searching and your longing to pick up those older songs and bring them back to life.
Yeah, well, I think you're hitting on the point of us titling the record Echo in the Valley.
Yeah.
Because I think both Bela and I are drawn to the elders and the places where this music came from and its ancient roots, and the further back we have the ability to go and hear the music that's been created over all these years that we've inherited, we hear very similar themes of human hope and trial and suffering and a desire for, specifically in this song, Come All You Coal Miners, it's really about a mother and a daughter of coal miners and wife of coal miners that wishes people treated other people better. I mean, it's just about humanitarianism. It's about basic respect for other human lives. And living in a coal camp, she saw the way her father and husband were treated brutally. They both died of black lung, and it was for profit and gain for somebody who did not suffer those same things. And so she sings about it, and I'm so grateful to her for singing about it, because these are not new themes that we're struggling with.
No.
This is all stuff that's been experienced before, and it's important to hear the desire of people of the past to also see this change.
The album, by the way, if you just tuned in, talking to Bela Fleck, Abigail Washburn. Abigail, you're a first-timer. I'm very happy to have a chance to speak with you. We're talking about Echo in the Valley, which is on Rounder. As of the time that we're talking, it's actually released now. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And I assume that if people, it's easy enough to find you on a website to where you're going to be. I've seen you, because I'm lucky and people like me and they let me watch great shows, I've seen the two of you, I don't know, doing versions, I suppose, leading up to this half a dozen times. And I enjoy it so much each time as you're expanding I guess really maybe the natural progression being this, but people need to see you do that. I assume on your website they can find out where you might be performing.
Yeah, we're going to be very busy through the end of the year, at least, and we'll be doing a good bit next year as well. But, yeah, this is the time when the record's new. We just sort of, we're taking our kid out of his three-day-a-week school and hitting the road.
We'll be all over the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast and some Midwest and even up to Montreal and Toronto. So,
oh, wow.
And then West Coast, don't forget that. We're
be in Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. So,
you know, you have to take him while he's young. You have to do this while you can pull him out and be more versatile and available to make him take him around. Because at some point, it's not going to be that easy.
That is what we hear. That's what we hear. So we're going for it.
You should. And think of all the stuff that he's learning and seeing and how you all benefit. And I've seen you with them, you know, before you go on stage. And I mean, just what a wonderful opportunity for the both of you and him. And
you know, this morning woke up and said, "Mama, Papa, is this a traveling day?" We said, "No, you get to go to school today." And he loves both.
So. Okay, good. I was gonna say, what is the reaction to that? Would he rather travel or go to school? But I hope he's liking school still.
Some days he's like, "Stay home, we'll be with me," and we're like, "But honey, you only get to go to school for 3 days this week." For 2 weeks, he says, "Oh yeah, I got to go see my friend." I think he's got a pretty amazing life going here so far.
We hope so.
He seems to be having a good time. He's on album covers. You know, what more could he want?
We're pretty obsessed with him.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah. We're already putting Woody away for his emotional therapy, though. We know we're doing something terribly wrong.
Therapy fun.
Well, listen, I know you guys are really busy, and thanks so much for being available so soon. I think we've covered the intent and certainly the feel, and I can't stress enough how much Abigail, how much, and maybe I've just not had the opportunity to really listen to it exhibited as it is on this album. And I've seen you so many times and so many different, but you're playing, and Bela, I mean, it's you're always on a different level of atmospheric playing to me, but Abby, I really think, and maybe it is because you're hanging out with this guy on the phone with you there, but your playing is really just a phenomenal clawhammer on this.
Well, you know what? I will take that to the bank and put it in and just appreciate your perspective. And I have worked hard, and I've been so lucky to be exposed to Bela's playing and have to try to keep up with him the best way I know how. So it's.
But also, when you think about how good Flat Scruggs sounded in their best years, they're playing all the time, and we've been playing a lot together.
Bela, you make a great point. You make a great point.
It's always been a tricky thing with a band is if you can find a way to be playing all the time, you're going to sound great. If you only get together once in a while, it's going to be harder to sound great. But Abby's incredibly talented, but I don't know if you've ever played as much as we're playing.
No, I never have. So this has been big.
And it's also very exposed, and there's like a, it's a, not a pressure cooker, but there's eyes on you. Like every moment you're heard, mm-hmm. So you have to when you're in a duo, you have to maintain a different level of solidity because there's no place to hide, and it'll either make you strong or make you want to retire.
Well, I hopefully not retired yet. I mean, just think of all the things you're still learning. I mean, you've been performing on stage for the number of years that you have, but you're still doing it, and you're still going to learn more and pull more from that. And you know, this is not this is not the signature piece to what we've been doing. This is sort of like the, not even a beginning, but this is where we are now.
Yeah, it's a postcard of what we are at this point.
I like that.
What we're trying to be, because you use a recording to improve and figure out what you're trying to be next and where you're trying to go with it.
Well, listen, both of you, I can't thank you so much for taking time out of your day to visit Unreal Bluegrass. We appreciate you, and I know the listeners always want to hear from what you're doing. So I'll let you get back to your regular thing. And both of you, Abby, thanks so much for stopping by with this Baylor guy.
Yeah, well, thank you, Steve. I'm so glad you were up for the twofer.
Yeah, come on, I always am. All right, listen, thanks so much. I'll let you go.
So long.
Bye-bye. Bye.